Good afternoon. We're starting our show a little bit early this morning. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasha Okowski.
And
Baba Jamal Karam.
Whoa, we have a special guest. Still morning, but that special guest will continue with us past the noon hour for our full hour of storytelling. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. We are a community-based internet radio station, and every Monday at 12 noon, we do this storytelling hour.
And some of us will be quiet.
I wondered what that expression meant from you, Stash. So our theme today is family traditions, and we're going to have stories and Q&A and a little bit of music and some wonderful reminiscences from all three of our storytellers this morning. So thanks for joining us. Probably we should start the program with an announcement about Stories in the Round, which meets this evening. Usually we're the fourth Monday of the month, but because the fourth Monday of the month in December would not be very convenient for most people, we're doing it this evening, 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike, and our special guest performer, our special storyteller this evening is none other than Baba Jamal Karam. And he's very graciously agreed to accompany us to the radio studio this morning to do a little bit of interview and a lot of storytelling and some music. And we're very glad that you can join us. So, if you want more information about tonight's performance at Stories in the Round, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. You probably have time to reach me via email at fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. But right now, Stash, do you have anything you want to say before we give the microphone to Baba Jamal?
I have nothing to add right now. I'm listening.
You're in listening mode? Okay.
This is an exciting day for me.
Baba Jamal, thank you so much for joining us for this evening's performance at Stories in the Round and for doing this little extra bonus on the radio show.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be in the company, not only of storytellers, but of where people love to hear story and where people live simple lives. And as we were traveling over here, I was looking at the scenery and just taking in all of this country life, which reminded me of where my grandfather and grandmother, and where they came from, and this kind of thing. So I feel at home, and I'm great to be here.
And we're happy to have you.
Yes, sir.
Storytelling always feels like home to me. But I am happy that you're happy, for sure. And I guess I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about how you came to storytelling, because you have a long history in this genre, and it hasn't always been easy. It hasn't always been a straight, positive slope. But I know you've learned a lot in the process, and you've led in many ways an exemplary life as a storyteller in the sense of making lemonade from lemons and finding help and mentors and life lessons wherever they find you.
Yes, indeed. I've been blessed in terms of performing and being in front of people. It probably started when the grown folks would get together over my Uncle Thelma and Aunt Florence. Yes, his name was Thelma. And he was from Roanoke, Virginia. But we would get over, we would come over to his house, and grown folks would start coming in on a Friday, and the children had to go upstairs because the grown folks were getting ready to party. And about midway through the party, when everybody was feeling right and warm, someone would call me downstairs and put the latest record on. It might have been Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop. By the Little Anthony Pierce, it might have been something else. But they wanted me to dance, and I would dance and do all the latest dance, and then they would be, I'd be like the little monkey. They gave me money, 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 money. and I would bring the money back upstairs, and my older sister would take the money and give everybody a little bit, you know, a penny here to an inch, her pocket. I hope, hope she doesn't hear this. Her pocket would be quite full. But I've been entertaining for a long time, and somewhere along the way, I think it was after I was in a singing group and opening up songs, telling little stories before we sang the songs, I think that led me to storytelling. And I stumbled on it down in when I was attending University of Virginia. And I can't believe I don't remember the storyteller's names. What was his name? Michael. Anyway, he was a French Canadian, and he was in Charlottesville at the time, and him and some other storytellers that were well known came in, and I was doing a local thing. They asked me to come on board one time, and there I was with nationally known storytellers, and hadn't told four or five stories myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it went from there. I got well known in that area, and then my family was in Baltimore. I went to Baltimore, met Mary Carter Smith, and they were getting ready to start the first African-American Storytelling Festival, and I fell into that. And so it's been a journey, and it's been a good journey, and I owe whatever talent I have to Uncle Thelma and Aunt Florence and the parties they used to have.
Oh, what a lovely way of honoring the ancestors. That's good. Well, I hear from people all the time that honor you as an elder and preserver of old stories, as well as incorporating personal stories and sharing your own learning experiences with youth and all the rest of us who need help keeping our feet firmly on the land and paying attention to what's going on with other people.
And I think what you're saying, paying attention is important to the art form, and not only the art form, but who are you representing in telling these stories? Who are we remembering? Where do we take the knowledge that comes through the stories that we tell, and what are we trying to underscore in our telling? Are we just entertaining for laughs, or is it a little more serious than that with the laughter? So it's a consistent, ongoing, assessment of what you're telling, who you're telling to, how you're telling. And some people approach us now, those storytellers who have been in the loop for a long time, or what do you think about where storytelling going now? Is storytelling not going anywhere? We're doing the same thing we've always done. We pay attention, we think, and we tell. Modernity has its place. We're inundated with a whole lot of electronics and microphones and radios and all of this, but the bottom line is storytelling is mouth to ear, and it should relate in some form or fashion to life itself, be it things that we can do in life, things that life will bring us, or how we can affect the lives that we live and the lives we touch. But it has to be somewhere in there needs to be life. We don't need to be robots telling stories. We have enough machines to do that. So
solidly unmechanized world in that sense.
Yeah, and it needs to be, and the journey needs to continue, and we need to keep bringing people into these back roads and front roads that, like we were traveling to get here, take a look at the scenery, look at the land, look at what's on the land, envision, and then create and tell. So it's been more than a journey, in the fact that I think when I started, I was an elder.
You know,
30 years ago, I felt like an elder.
You're an old soul.
You know, and But I managed to be in the right place at the right time for a lot of opportunities and with the right people. And so I've just enjoyed the journey and still am.
I'm gonna ask Stash to mix it up a bit. Baba Jamal, if you would think for a minute about what story you'd like to tell to start out with. And Stash, can you give us a report on the final Speak series of season six that
yes.
we just experienced this week?
This past week on December 10th and 11th, at Shepherd University through the Speak Story series, Elizabeth Ellis was in town. And she did a workshop on the 10th, on a Monday evening, which I was sorry to miss, but I was in a plane on my way home from Utah, so...
That's a good excuse.
Yes.
I think we'll let you slide.
But her concert on Tuesday evening at Reynolds Hall was just exceptional. She is a gifted storyteller and has been for many years, and she came back... after being snowed out in March, with some concern that we might be snowed out in December, but she managed to thrill the audience. We had a packed house, and she told some wonderful stories, some traditional tales, and also some personal tales. So, and the Speak Story series is finished for the year, and we'll begin again in February with a fundraiser with a special guest storyteller who is coming from one of those states that starts with an I. I think it's Illinois. I always get it mixed up. But a really great storyteller is going to be here in February for this special evening. So
very good. And I'm looking forward to the full series. And Adam Booth, the coordinator of Speak Story Series, has been giving us little clues as to tellers for the rest mm-hmm. of the season. But I imagine within the next month that he'll have posted all of the tellers for all 10 sessions. So we can look forward to that.
Yes.
We're not quite at our usual time for station identification, but I'm going to squeeze it in here anyway. You're listening to Enlighten Radio. .org. And this is the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour. Baba Jamal is our guest this morning with Fanny Crawford and
Stash Theokowski.
And we've just been doing a little catching up with Baba and a little Q&A. But I think we're ready for a story if Baba's ready for us.
Yes, indeed. As usual, you know, stories start running through my head, depending on what audience, since I don't have an audience in front of me. let me just do this one. I had an opportunity to travel to a place called Senegal. From Senegal, I went to Ghana. From Ghana, flew back to a place called Mali. And in Mali, I was looking for Sunjata. Sunjata was an ancient king that had a reputation for building empires. And so we went to the place where Sunjata was born, and we went to the place where Sunjata passed away. At one point, we even sat with the elders. 21 elders came into a courtyard to meet with me. Wanted to know what I wanted to know about Sunjata. My elders, was Sunjata, was he the only king that defeated that many warriors on the plains of Karina, or was there others? And I asked several other questions about Sunjata, and one of the elders stood up and said, "We would love to tell you, but if you want to know all of that, you will have to come back." One woman came from China and we gave her, and he put his thumb on his pointer finger and said, we gave her that much information, and she wrote a book 1,000 pages long, and we never received any money from the sales. Soon Jata was born a big boy. He had a hard time coming into the world, and when he came into the world, his mother said, whew, I'm glad that's over. Soon Jata crawled around at an early age and started snatching food from the other children, and they really didn't like that boy who was bigger than them, snatching food from them, and could not walk. All he could do was crawl, and he would just say, snatch, 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 and eat, eat, eat. And one day, Soon Jata's mother went to the first wife. She was one of the wives of the king then. May I borrow some baobab leaves to cook with my son? He's always wanting to eat. May I borrow some baobab? She said, well, why don't you get your son to get you some baobab leaves? My son gets me leaves. Why don't you get your son to get leaves? You know Soon Jata can't walk. You know his legs are crippled. Why are you saying these mean things to me? Oh, you want some leaves? And the woman got a basket full of leaves and poured it all over Soon Jata's mother's head. And Soon Jata's mother went back to her compound crying and saw her son there, big as a man, didn't walk, didn't really talk. Why can't you walk? Why can't you talk? Why can't you get your mother baobab leaves like other little boys get their mothers? And for the first time, this boy opened his mouth and he asked a question. Mama, do you want me to walk? Of course I want you to walk. Yes, I want you to walk. And he sent for this long iron pole that was made for the day he would walk, and Soon Jata received that pole and put his hands on it and lifted the pole, a pole that it took 6 people to carry over. And he lifted it, and then he pulled himself up until he was standing, threw that pole away like it were a spear, and began to walk. His little brother and sister, walk, Soon Jata. Walk, his mother. Oh, my goodness, my son is walking. Mama, you want some baobab leaves? Of course I want baobab leaves, but you walking is all that I really want to see. No, Mama, there's more. And Soon Jata, I'm going to shorten the story for you. But he walked over to that tree, that big baobab tree, and he pushed on it. The roots started popping up out the ground. He pushed on it again. Bigger roots started popping out the ground. He put his arms as far as he could around this huge tree. He squatted down and lifted the tree out of the ground, carried it over to his mama, and said, Mama, there are your baobab leaves. How come you never walked before? How come you never talked before? Before, Mama, you never asked me to walk. Before, Mama, you never asked me to talk. And so if we want our children to do great things, and we do want that to happen in many instances, all we have to do is ask. That's the end of that story.
Wow. That's wonderful.
There's a That's message wonderful. You don't hear every day. That's wonderful. Great story of Sujata.
Yes,
looking forward to hearing more Sujata stories.
Yeah, well, we went to the lands, and it was an eye-opening experience. Yeah. Traveling the path of Soon Jata as he went from a boy to a grown man. Yeah.
Is that one of the story threads that you think you'll be following this evening?
I could. I mean, I'm just I'm looking through my list.
You're wide open.
When you get old, you know, you have to carry a list around. It's just, either that or just pop up and tell something. You know, and we can do that, yeah, for sure.
I've heard you do that to great effect, mesmerizing audiences. I do like that story. And I'm going to have to do some research of my own on Sujata. That's a very interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, there was a story that I wanted to tell. You don't mind if I share this with you?
No, go ahead.
I grew up in a little small town called Greenberg, New York. And Greenberg was like, what do you call it, the bedroom community for people that worked in New York City. It was only 30 miles away. And there was a certain section of Greenberg called Parkway Gardens. And Parkway Gardens, you had artists like Moms Mabley, Roy Campanella lived on the other side of Greenberg, and Gordon Parks, and just a whole bunch of stars that had to work in New York, and they were only 30 miles away. And so we would go over their houses or go to their houses, because they had children, a lot of them, and we all mixed and mingled, and it was a great opportunity to be with people that you would ordinarily mix and mingle with. But Greenberg was like that. My grandfather and grandmother came up from Virginia about maybe in the 1880s, 1890s. And they set up shop in Greenberg. And I say set up shop because my grandmother and grandfather had about 16 children. And my father was one of the youngest. And so we came around. My grandmother had passed when I finally came into the world. She passed when I was about 2 years old. They say she cried when my mother cut my hair, because all of her sons had long hair until they were about 5 years old. Then they got haircuts. It's an old native thing, I understand. And then, but Greenberg was like that, full of different personalities. And one day I went over to my uncle's house and playing with my cousins, and they said, "Hey man, why don't we go around to Daddy round the corner's house, and I want to show you something." I said, "What do you want to show me?" "I want to show you something by his bed. We can't just go in there. He's sleeping." "Yeah, he sleeps real hard. We won't bother him." And so me and my little naive self, I said, "Come on, let's go. I want to see it." So we walked into the house. Everything was quiet. Big house, big front porch. He had raised 16, 17 children in that house, him and my grandmother. We walked into his bedroom, and he was sleeping. But he was sleeping with one eye open and the other eye shut. I said, "How do you sleep like that? He's looking at us. He can't see us until he puts that eye in his head." And there was another eye in the glass. And we saw that little eye looking at us in the glass. And then he made some kind of when he was sleeping. And he looked like he was going to wake up. And his other eye started flickering. And we said, "Oh, my goodness." We jumped up and ran.
I love that story.
My grandfather, he never heard about us being in the house.
Oh.
But we sure didn't do that again. In the 1920s, a stock market crash, he lost a bunch of money. He was a brick mason. He was just a handyman all the way around, built homes and whatnot, and had a lot of money, lost a lot of money. And so he died with about maybe well, I don't want to talk about my family's wealth or not wealth, but he died with a lot of money in his mattress. We call him Daddy Round the Corner, and he's still with us. Round the corner. Hope y'all have one, a Daddy Round the Corner. Yeah.
That's something to have so many daddies that you need to label them by the corners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he had him and my grandmother. They had, I think, 17 children.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
That's a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah, and they fed us.
Mm. Well, I'm sure.
And all the grandchildren that came there with it too. Yeah, it was great.
That's wonderful. You're listening to Enlightened Radio, the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, community-based internet radio station broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. Stash Zielkowski.
Yes.
I think you have a story for us.
I do have a story, traditions. But I also have a question first.
Okay.
Baba, could you tell us what is the instrument that the people can hear under your story?
Yeah, it's a modified instrument. It's an mbira. You'll see these in East Africa and more often than not in other parts of Africa now. And what it is it's some metal tines that use a gourd as a resonator. In Africa, they're usually on a flat board. That's the first resonator. Mm-hmm. And then they fit into the gourd. But I ran across a young man in Oregon that, you know, he bypassed setting it down, setting that platform into the gourd. He just put it all together.
Right. It's a beautiful instrument.
Oh, my goodness.
And lovely tone. Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, the way he makes it, you can, I think this is a C pentatonic. So you can put it in different signatures if you want.
Right.
So
well, it's great. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay, so I will share a story I actually shared yesterday. Maybe I'll do a better job today. About a family tradition, and it just so happens that this being close to Christmas and holiday season, I had a hard time thinking about family traditions when you mentioned this as a topic for yesterday's performances. And because my parents passed away pretty early in my life, my mother when I was 20, my father when I was 32. And so as an adult, I didn't have anybody to rely on to keep family traditions going, especially since so many of us moved. You know, my sister was married, my brother was in the Navy and married, and my other brother was in the Navy and married, and at 17, I went in the Army. And so we were seldom together as a family after that until we got much older. And by then, no one was keeping any traditions that I can remember. But as a young man, as a young boy, and until my teen years, Christmas Eve was a big deal to me, for not just for presents, but for something very special about a family tradition. The Christmas Eve meal was called Vigilia. And the way it worked was everybody in the family would meet in the evening, and we lived in Baltimore, so it wasn't easy to see the first star in the evening sky, but that was part of this tradition. They would send one of the kids out to look for the first star in the evening, because that was the kind of the button that set us off. That was the way the meal began. And there were at least 12 different dishes for the meal. No meat, because I was raised in a Catholic family, and most of the Polish people were Catholic and still are. And the last night before Christmas was the end of Advent, and so we were still bound by not eating any meat till the next day. So we had all kinds of other things. We had different soups. One of them was a fish soup. We had borscht, which was made from beetroots. And then we had sauerkraut and peas and dumplings and latkes and carrots and mushrooms, rice and barley, herring and fish, either carp or else catfish. And we had dumplings called pierogies, and donuts, called Punch Geese. That was one of my favorites. And we also have other desserts, like some candied fruit. But the reason the meal was so important to me was because as a child, I learned under my mother's tutelage that whatever was put on my plate, I had to eat. And so even as a young child, 3-4 years old, if I didn't finish what was put on my plate, I stayed at the table until I either fell asleep or I gave in and ate. That only happened a few times to me. I was not the brightest bulb, but I did learn after a couple of times that sitting at the kitchen table until 9 or 10 o'clock at night was not what I called fun. So I did learn to eat everything, whatever mom put on the plate, I ate. At the Christmas Eve meal at Vigilia, there was a rule. You had to eat some of every dish that was put on the table. And the reason I liked this meal so much was that my older brother hated the beetroot soup. And my sister, who was the eldest of the children, hated herring. And each year, I just waited to see what my mother put on the table. And I was always glad to see those two things because my brother, 9 years older than I am, and my sister, who's 12 years older than I am, both really had a difficult time putting even one little bit in their mouth. And for a young child, that was so much fun to watch what I considered adults suffer. And the meal was always a lot of fun because my father was a good entertainer. My father was, I never thought of my father as a storyteller, but he did tell us lots of things about his job and about the family. And also, one of the traditions that I should have put first was a poatek. And that word means angel bread. So the in a Catholic church and some other churches, people go to communion and they get a small wafer at a certain part of the mass or the service. And angel bread or a poatek was made from the exact same formula as the communion wafer. It was made from a paste of flour and water in equal proportions, and it was pressed just one tablespoonful, put on a grill kind of, and then pressed until the water was all, I was going to say burned out, but not burned out, heated out. And when the water stopped screeching, we would say a Hail Mary, which was just long enough to finish the heating process, I guess. And then you could take that off the hot plate. And it was exactly like the communion wafer. Well, actually, you could buy those. At that time, we used to go to the church and buy them. Nuns in the convents made those and sold them. Mm. And so you could go to the parish house and the priest would sell those to you. And they didn't cost very much. They were about 6 inches long and 3 inches wide. And they were very thin. And there was a tradition that went with these. The oldest person at the evening meal, just on Christmas Eve, would take the wafer and break a piece off of it and give it to the next oldest person. Or if it was my father who started it, then he would go to my mother, break it off. And then they would each break a small piece off of theirs and share it with each other and say something nice, you know, wish a good day, a good year, thanks for being a good provider, something. And then they would go throughout the room to everybody else, and everybody would break a piece off of theirs and then share a little bit of that back with them. And the problem with it, and what I was very amused at as a child, was once it got down to the baby, I was the baby, I have very small pieces. And it was very difficult for me to share with my three siblings and my parents, and sometimes I didn't have any at all. And so after a couple of years, my father got the idea that he should use more than one wafer and make sure that when he shared it with everybody, that he saw that they got a big piece.
Yeah.
So that they could share. And nowadays, you do not have to go to the parish priest, and there are fewer and fewer nuns in all the Catholic churches and schools. So what you do now is just go to Amazon, look it up on Google. There are any number of people who will send you the angel bread, the wafer, and it's not very expensive. And it is certainly not delicious. It is just a very dry, you know. But they are very beautiful. Some of them come in different colors, like a light pink or a light blue, and they have patterns on them, pictures, some of the Holy Family with Christ Child and Joseph and Mary, some with an angel, and so it is a nice tradition. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to do that with any people in my family because we've been spread out in different parts of the country for many years. And so I haven't done it for many years.
Wow.
I love that story. And yesterday when you told this story, I was looking forward to this part. You made vivid descriptions of your brother and sister as they tasted those foods that they didn't like, and your joy in watching them suffer.
It's easier to tell that story to an audience where they can see your face, you know, because it isn't often when the baby in the family gets to see the older elders put to task or suffer.
You're looking at that last little crumb that got to you. Yeah, this is it.
That's right, yeah.
I also remember the part about the board under the table where your brother hid the food that he didn't want to eat.
Yeah.
But he didn't share that secret with you till you were a teenager.
My brother was, I'm the only person in my family who went to college, but my brother was smarter than I was always in life skills. And the one thing that he shared with me when I was 14, which was far too late, is that he would sneak food off his plate and put it on the board under the kitchen table that we could put in the middle of the table when we had to expand it.
Right.
And he would leave it there until later, and then he would collect it and throw it away. And when I found out at 14 or so, why didn't you tell me that before? He just laughed.
Well, what's so great to me about that story is that as super a housekeeper as your mother was, and as tight a rein as she managed all her children and her husband, and she never knew that. He was so clever about doing that, that she never figured that out.
I sometimes think she might have known it, but I was her favorite child. He got away with all kinds of things, you know.
Lovely story. Okay, you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. And today we have
Baba Jamal
and Fanny Crawford and
Stasi Olkowski
as your storytellers. Wow. I don't think we have any storytelling events coming up in the near future that we need to announce. But Baba, do you have anything you want our listeners to? Are you appearing anywhere besides Stories in the Round this evening that you want our listeners to know about? Because we have listeners on the West Coast. We have listeners in other countries, or so I am told.
And I'm getting to the point where I have to carry around that information in a booklet or something like that. But this is December. I'm getting ready. I'm gearing up for my West Coast sojourn. Every year in January, I'm out in California and doing stories out there for about 2 or 3 weeks. And doing stories up in Arcata and Eureka and places like that. And it's always a joy to go there, to go to the various schools and during the day, and then to come to the friend's house that I stay at and just sit in the what do you call that little enclosed area that but anyway, just sit and look at the ocean, see the Pacific Ocean, see a whale or two pop up, or the crab boats at night. So I'll be headed out to do that hard work.
Well, I heard you were telling me over breakfast this morning about visiting that part of the country in Humboldt County in California.
Yeah.
And talking about the redwoods up there. So I know this annual pilgrimage that you make there is really important to you, and
Oh, yeah.
The people that you get to see.
Get to see some of the indigenous people from that area. You get to hear the Sasquatch stories, and and maybe you might hear Sasquatch at night.
You never know.
I'm sure we have, yeah. And it's just a wonderful time being out there, and the people that we have grown to respect and love each other, I would even say. So that's what I'm gearing up for.
All right. So if people want more information, do you have any of those events listed on your website?
Not yet, but I'll put them on there.
Okay. Well, maybe you should give our listeners your website so that they can...
Well, just look up Baba Jamal Karam, Storyteller, and the website will pop up somewhere.
That's how I've done it, every time.
I used to be real good. When I was a senior in high school, I was... One of part of my studies was... what do you call it? Had to do with computers.
Hmm.
Data processing was called in those days.
Back in medieval times, you mean?
Yeah, so I was going to go into data processing. We used to go to this, what do you call those schools where you learn a trade?
Vocational.
Vocational kind of thing. And we would leave the high school, go to that vocational where I learned about computers. And the computers in those days were as big as a picnic table. And as high as your waist, and you had to punch cards for every letter, every word you had. So if you had a sentence, a five-sentence letter you wanted, you might have had 50, 60 punched cards that had to go through. That was the computer.
You were on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah. And so when I graduated from high school, though, that summer I worked at IBM and saw some real computers. And got a... I peeped what was going to be, what was happening, and what was going to be the futuristic future approach to computers. That at 1 year we would be holding computers in our hands, and I couldn't believe it then. But here's one in my hand. On you know. So, but no. So we just take every moment that we're living and every opportunity we have to learn something new. Or to revisit something that we enjoyed in life, and mix and mingle with people, and get to know folks, and get to understand what makes them tick, and what they enjoy in life, and to always try to push storytelling as mouth to ear, and not necessarily ear to machine. Always pushing storytelling that so that we are teaching something in that story that applies to living, that applies to getting along with one another, that applies to existing in a world that's changing rapidly.
So I had a thought about your visit to California.
Uh-huh.
You're going to stay at someone's home.
Every time.
That is the, for me, is one of the most exciting things over the last few years, last number of years. I have had storytellers stay at my house for overnight, sometimes 2 or 3 nights. And besides having them perform at some venue, mm-hmm. the best part of the visit for me is always sitting in the living room in the evening or in the morning and just listening and sharing stories and listening to someone like yourself and really learning more that way. Yeah, it's always a really pleasant experience.
And we have circles like that when I go there, and you know, people are telling the stories, but the one I like is the singing circles.
Right.
That you know, a bunch of folks come over the house, they have the books, everybody opens up and starts singing all night long. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good thing too.
It is. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, so you know, we gather stories where we are. We tell what we think might be significant in someone's life, and we enjoy what we do.
Right.
So those trips to California are great for me. Never would have seen whales jumping out of the
Pacific Ocean. Right.
I'm literally 15 feet from the edge of a cliff that drops down to the ocean.
Right.
You know, so. It's always a joy to be in that area, and the people they're so friendly and loving. I look forward to it every year.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you do. Yeah.
Stosh, we've been talking a little bit about the story session from yesterday in Frederick, and you told the same story, one of the same stories that you told there. And while we have Baba thinking about what story you'd like to tell Baba next, I thought, Stosh, you might talk about that story series. I'm not sure yet about the dates, but we have been meeting in Frederick at New Spire Arts fourth Sunday from 3 to 5. And according to Daniel Singh, the executive director of New Spire Arts, we're going to continue that series in 2019. So maybe you could give us your perspective on what those sessions are like and why people might want to come and listen and tell stories.
Well, I think it's a great program that they've started there. It only was 4 months so far, four events, but starting in January 2019, we will have we'll be doing it again every month, and people come in to hear a two co-hosts. Each co-host will do 5-minute story, and then a featured teller will have 30 minutes. And the idea of this is so that the people who attend will be able to hear seasoned storytellers, experienced storytellers, and then it's the rest of the afternoon is an open mic session, and anyone can get up and tell a story. There's usually a theme. However, in order to encourage people to share stories, if they don't have a story about the theme, we're very understanding and say, just tell a story. And yesterday was a wonderful example. We had 21 people in the room, and two of them were teenagers, which was incredible. And I asked the girls, they were sisters, if they would be willing to share a story. And I had been watching them from across the room, and they were very interested in what else was going on. And so their father volunteered to tell the story first to show them that it was safe. and then they did. The oldest girl told a story by herself, and then she and her younger sibling told the story in tandem. And it was wonderful because we're trying very hard to encourage young people to get involved in storytelling, both as a teller and as a listener, to appreciate the art form. And for me, that was a great experience yesterday. I relied on my old teacher skills to pick on a student and get them to get involved in it. And it wasn't picking on because they were interested in it to begin with. So that was very nice.
That was a fun day. So so our listeners can go to the newspirearts.org website and find out what's coming up for the future. There's nothing posted there yet for 2019 as far as storytelling goes, but they are very active in the arts community in general. Their mission is community through the arts, engaging people in the arts. all over the region, and they have some wonderful programs, dance and theater and poetry and music, crafts, and it's a great place to find your own niche. And any minute, we'll have the schedule up for 2019. They're also opening a new Black Box Theater in downtown Frederick, right across from the Weinberg Center.
300 seats.
Yeah, so we can aspire to that for the future.
That's, you know, that's a pretty good size Black Box Theater.
That's right.
Most of them are a lot smaller than that.
But we're also trying to be in the moment, in the present. And since we have Baba Jamal Khorram with us all the way from Virginia, we want to hear his stories this afternoon. And I think you've got one ready for us, don't you?
It'll pop up.
Yeah. Being in the present.
Yeah.
And you're...
I went to... Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm just remembering that you're playing the imbira. Mm-hmm. And I love the resonator.
Yeah.
The gourd resonator on this instrument.
Yeah, this is a special instrument. It allows me to think. I was thinking about this one story. Maybe I'll tell that... Galgan girabi, elaksubatel dinadem Congo. What is he saying? Galgan girabi, elaksubatel dinadem Congo. I don't know what I'm saying. I was in West Africa, and I was in a place called Senegal. And in Senegal, there was a river called the Bani River, and I just was sitting on the beach, and this young man came up to me, and he had an instrument called, I can't think of the name of it, it's a stringed instrument, and he was playing it, and he sang that song, and he told me this story. He said that once there was a handyman, and the handyman would help anybody that was on the shorelines, and one day he decided that today he was not going to work. Today he was going to ask Mariamu to be his wife. And so he was getting ready to go down the river. He was putting on his best clothes. He cleaned out his boat. And he was on his way down the Bani River. Galgan girabi, galgan girabi, elaksubate dinadem Congo. And there was a man on the shore, and he said, "Hey, Kalonga, Kalonga, come here, come here. I can't stop. I'm going to see Mariamu. I'm going to ask her to marry me. Come here, man. Come here." And so Kalongo, being a nice boy and respecting his elders, he went over and he said, "Yes, I'm going to see. I know, but I need some help. I need you to help me bring. You see those three boats over there? I need you to help me bring those three boats to the shore. Can you help me with that? I'm going to get dirty. I ask you, can you help me?" Okay, and so they brought the first boat out and drug the second boat out and drug the third boat out, and Kalonga, his shirt was dirty, and then the man said, "And oh, one more thing. Oh, no, I got to go see Mariam. One more thing, Kalonga. You look across the river there. You see across the river? You see my mother waving at you? Go over and talk to my mother. She has some things for you to bring over here. And when you finish bringing those things over here, then you get her and you bring her over here." Oh, my goodness gracious, said Kalongo. So he went over. And when he went, the mother was so happy to see him. "Oh, Kalonga, you sweet boy. You," she pinching his cheeks, giving him kisses all over the forehead. "And come here, carry this." And he carried that food over. Took two trips to carry the food. Went and got the grandmother. Brought her over. He said, "Is that it? Thank you, Kalonga. You are a good boy. You will be blessed." And Kalonga went down the Bani River. Galgan girabi hadn't gone too far when he heard, "Hey, Kalonga, come here. Come, I have to go see Mariamu. Come here, boy. Come here." Said, "What is it that you want? I need your help, Kalonga. Look, I need to build something goes like this." And he made this sign for a roof. I need something going. And he made the sign for a little room. And they made the sign for a little platform. And Kalonga said, this will take too long. No, Kalonga, do it now with me and it won't take any time at all. And so he got the wood, zooza, 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 dangling, dangling, boom, 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 boom. And pretty soon that was done. He said, we are finished now? No, Kalonga, now we have to paint it. And Kalonga said, oh, no, we have to paint that. And he started zooza, 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 zooza. Now we are finished? Yes, Kalonga. Go and ask Mariamu to be your wife. And they went down the Bani River. Galgan Girabi, Galgan Girabi, Elaksubatel Dinadem Congo. Gal, hey, Kalonga, Kalonga, come here. Oh, no, who is calling me now? And Kalonga, he went over to the shore. Kalonga, where are you going? I'm going to see Mariamu so I can ask her to marry me. Oh, Kalonga, you look at you. You are a mess. Boy, you got paint all over your clothes, everything. Come here. I have something for you. No, I have something for you, Kalonga. Kalonga went. He took off his clothes. The man had made him new clothes. Kalonga said, I am a sharp boy now. Look at me. He said, now, Kalonga, you may go ask Mariamu. And he got in his boat and he went down the Bani River. Galgan Girabi, Galgan Girabi. And he got down there. He got off his boat. He went up one sand dune and down. He went up another sand dune and he heard some music. And when he got to the top of that sand dune, he looked down. And there were all of these people. All of the people were there. And he saw the grandmother with the food. He saw the boatman with his boat. Kalonga, look, I brought 3 boatloads full of people. Come on, come on. Food stretched out. He saw the little house that he helped to build. He said, what is going on here? Where is Mariamu? And he looked at the door to the house. The door opened slowly. And Mariamu's father came out. Then her mother came out. And then there was Mariamu. Ooh, my goodness gracious. She was pretty up here. She was pretty over here. She was pretty right here. She was pretty all over. Had on the nice clothes. And Kalonga said, what is going on here? And the father said, you don't know. Today, you are going to get married. And I never even asked her. You can ask her now. And Kalonga walked over to Mariamu. And she put her head down and started blushing and her eyelids flapping up and down. And he took her and said, Mariamu, will you marry me? She said, I don't know. Mariamu, I'm not laughing. Would you marry me, please? She said, of course I will, you silly boy. And then the music came, the drummers came, everybody came, the food was being eaten. Oh, the people were so happy, so happy, so happy. And then, when the sun was going down, they got into the boat. And they rode down the moonlit river, going to Dakar to sit on the beach and to enjoy their new life together. Galgan Girabi, Galgan Girabi. That's the end of that one.
Wow. Oh.
Beautiful. That one could go on and on and on. I wanted to know what happened to that young couple. Yeah, ever after.
Yeah.
Wow. Wonderful story.
And what made it even more important for me is that I rode down the Bonnie River.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Yeah. That was terrific.
Thank you. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
I think we have time for another story. Stash, do you have another story you would like to tell? If you
about traditions?
Well, you can make it be about traditions. I know you can, but what you
an
just
announcement.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And then I'll have one.
Okay. I guess what I want our listeners to know is that at the very beginning of this broadcast, we played you a song called Tarry Here that Andy Offit Irwin wrote himself. And if you've never heard of Andy Offit Irwin, you need to Google Andy Offit, O-F-F-U-T-T, Irwin, I-R-W-I-N, and listen to some of this guy's stories. But even beyond his amazing, warm-hearted, nurturing, soul-satisfying stories, he's also a singer-songwriter and a symphonic whistler. And Andy's given us permission to play that Tarry Here song and use that as our entry into Radio Land every Monday at 12 noon. So we want to thank him for that gift and let him know how much we appreciate that.
Okay, I have a story.
It's your turn.
All right. I know that traditions, in my mind, and I think with most people, are things that happen at regular intervals, like every year at Christmas or every year in December and January sometime. But this is just a little bit of a story about a tradition that I started, kind of got trapped into a number of years ago, and it doesn't happen every year, but it has happened a number of different places and always near Christmas time. Many years ago, I had a good friend who's still around, and he had a daughter who was a challenged child. She had to go to a special school. And on the afternoon of this specific day, the man who was to be Santa Claus became ill and was taken to the hospital. Mm. And they had that evening at 6 o'clock, they were supposed to have, he was supposed to show up as Santa Claus at this special school. There were 28 students in this class, and they were going to have, Santa Claus was going to visit them and their parents. Every one of these children was challenged by some real difficulty, mostly with verbal abilities or being able to keep up with their classmates. They were far behind and things. Mike called me, and I've worn a beard for almost 50 years, and I've often had people say, "Oh, you look like Santa Claus," and especially around Christmas time. And Mike called me and said, "I need you to play Santa Claus at Megan's school." I said, "Mike, I've never played Santa Claus." Mm-hmm. And he said, "You're the only person I can think of." And I said, "When is this?" And I was thinking maybe it was, you know, 2 or 3 days. He said, "At 6 o'clock." This was like 4:30 in the afternoon.
Right.
So I had an hour and a half to get my mind around being jolly old Saint Nick. And he told me, "We have the costume, we have stuffing, everything. It'll be great. So all you have to do is sit on the chair. The kids will come up one at a time. Their parents will be there. There will be an elf next to you that will tell you the child's name. And all you have to do is, you know, a couple sentences with each kid. And there's a present that the elf will give you to give to each child. So, you know, that's all you have to do." And he said, "I know you've done a lot of theater, so you can do this." Mm-hmm. I went that night, and it was easily one of the best things I ever did in my life. Wow. Because every one of those children just loved me, loved Santa Claus. And there was one a small child, a boy, an African-American boy, who came up and sat on my lap, and we talked a little bit, and all of a sudden he said, "I like your belt." And I said, "I do too." And he said, "Can I have it?" And I said, "Oh, no, no, no. Santa can't give you his belt." I said, "You know, see how big I am? I said, my pants would fall down. And people laughed and everything. And he said, don't you have another one? And I said, yes, but it's at the North Pole. And he said, well, I'll wait until you get that one. And the place just erupted with laughter. And we managed to get through that. But since then, I have volunteered at a number of hospitals and homes where people are there. They're not going home. And I did it just this past year at a home where my sister was. And my sister couldn't come to the celebration that was down in the main room. Mm-hmm. She was on the second floor and she was bedridden. And I told the woman I would do this for the hospital. And I don't do it for pay, and I've never wanted to do it in malls or anything.
Right.
But I said, but I have to go to my sister's room before I come there. And I went as Santa Claus. Had a present for her, and we talked a little bit, and she called me Santa and stuff. And I was sure that she was in the last months of her life, and I was sure that she did not know who I was. And we talked for a little while, and then I said, I have to go. I have other people to see. And I leaned over and kissed her on the forehead, and I started to walk out the door, and she said, you're so silly. Goodbye, Stosh. and which was wonderful, because many times when I visited her there, she did not know who I was. She called. Right, she thought I was my father or one of my brothers. So anyway, it's always scary for me to do that, because I always think of myself as being shy, even though I'm really not.
Right.
But people are so thrilled with Santa Claus, especially people who need some smiling face and somebody to be nice to them. And so that's a tradition that I hope I get to do again.
I hope you do too. Yeah. In fact, I'm coming up with places to suggest. But that's another conversation another day.
Me and my big mouth.
Well, and of course I'm spinning off like, well, you could have reindeer and you could have elves and
you always want to add
more
and stuff.
And if Hanukkah hadn't already happened, you'd there'd be more suggestions.
I've never been a Hanukkah Harry.
Okay. Fine. Have it your way.
Has anyone ever heard of a late Santa Claus?
The late
come that New Year's.
where has he been?
I don't know. He's not too late.
In some countries, they celebrate Christmas
on a different date. Yeah.
You know.
I don't know that that's what Bob is speaking of, though.
Yeah.
I think he just means just a late Santa Claus.
That would be pretty funny.
Maybe he didn't have reindeer that year. Right. He had
reindeer got sick or something.
Right.
Yeah. Possums or something carrying the sleigh. Okay. So, I opened the show. Stosh,
yes.
Would you like to close the show today?
Well, I will, but it's sad to close the show today because that means we won't hear any more of your stories. However, we will this evening.
Yes,
and I'll be there bright and early and have a good seat and make sure that we can hear everything. And you will tell whatever you want to tell tonight, but I know the audience there would love the story of the young man going down the river. They really would.
So, Stories in the Round this evening, Monday, the December 17th at 7 p.m., 13245 Searfoss Pike, just west of the Hagerstown town limits. And you can get more information by calling me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638.
This is Stacey Okowski.
And Fanny Crawford.
And
Baba Jamal Karam.
Your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia, closing out this week's show. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for
Christmas Rock and Roll.
Christmas Rock and Roll.